And you need to lead with the why, because ultimately, if that doesn't make sense, you're going to find that very few people are going to follow whatever initiatives you lay out for that organization or for their business unit or department.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solinox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest today. We have Jim Spignardo. So he's the Director of Cloud Strategy and AI Enablement at ProArt. So Jim, thank you so much for coming on the call. Really excited to have this conversation.
Yes. Great to be here.
Yes. You know, Jim, so at your role at ProArt, you know, tell the audience a little bit about, you know, what does it look like? And, you know, what got you into this role of AI enablement and cloud strategy?
Sure. It's not been a role that I've had for a super long time. Given that this is a fairly new area of technology, not AI specifically, but more generative AI. But my primary role within our organization and also for our customers is to help them with AI enablement. What that means is trying to navigate what these tools can do for an organization and how to adopt them in a way that actually leads to success. It's probably the simplest way that I could put it. Ultimately, what this leads to is a fairly large cultural shift in organizations. And so it's not something that comes naturally to every person or every company. And there is a lot of things that need to be put in place in order to ensure that these tools are being used securely, ethically, but in a way that it also can demonstrate return on investment and value to a company.
You know, and I think it's a lot of, you hear a lot of, and I don't know if it's just the marketing that's been so well done from the larger corporations and so forth else, that this is a new, like a magic pill. And of course, you know, folks that are in our field, you know, it's really what I'm seeing. Do you feel like there's so much, not only just hype, but around the content and what it can be done rather than what I call like the building foundation? So as you said, that governance, that guardrailing, you know, the of course the cybersecurity, but the change management of how that is. Do you see that? Do you see, like, even with clients and just from your experience, that that's lacking, or is that, or is there a disconnect with that?
There's definitely a disconnect. I think a lot of organizations have bought into some of the hype that, you know, you just simply put this in place in a particular business unit or particular process and wave your hand and you're going to, you know, magically increase revenues and efficiency of your employees. The reality is that if your data house is not in order, it can actually make things a little bit more challenging for your users. It can also create some confusion and some, in some cases, some anxiety for folks who feel like they're being put upon of, hey, you got to use these tools to do work now, but we're not providing you a good framework for how to use the tools. And then there's the secondary kind of side effect, which is, am I helping eliminate my job here? and so maybe I won't use them, or maybe I'll sabotage the effect of using these tools to protect myself. And so having a good, clear message as an organization and making sure that you are establishing the right framework ahead of time from the standpoint of, you know, the executive messaging going out to folks saying, hey, this is what our expectations of using these tools. We're going to provide you support. The idea here is that it's not here to replace you. It's here to kind of unlock your potential. I call it the 3 Ds, getting rid of the things that are dull, distracting, and also kind of the things that are challenging that you don't want to take care of, right? Those are the things we want to take off of people's plates and help them improve. But initially, it's about, you know, establishing a good usage policy, making sure you review your data state, that things are in a place where you don't have confusing or data that's out of date, that AI can give you bad results based on the fact that it can't make heads or tails of what it should be responding to. So,
you know, with that and coming through, and just from your, you know, leadership just over the years from your experience, Jim, you know, what does it look like now? And what have you seen when you're working with clients? What does, in balancing that strategy, you know, balancing the clients, but also with ProArch, you know, handling the internal and AI initiatives? You know, I'm always curious to see what other, with leaders and how you navigate that and you know, produce that for clients.
Yeah. And so, you know, we have several programs that kind of are these holistic approaches to AI adoption and enablement. We make every effort to kind of be honest about the conversations. If we have customers that are kind of trying to jump directly to solutioning, we try and pump the brakes with them and say, hey, where's your data? Do you have a data governance policies and initiative and a council that can, you know, ensure that the data is in a good place? Have you considered the risks to the organization? You know, kind of setting the table to establish the foundational criteria before just running off and trying to execute. Traditionally, that has been a difficult conversation to have before AI came into the picture. These are things, all these things are not new, right? These are things every company should be doing anyways. What we're talking about now is you can't hide from your bad data. You can't hide from your disorganization and mess, because AI is going to expose it very quickly. And so now those customers that we've dealt with in the past that kind of spent a lot of time contemplating data governance have realized it's not something they can no longer ignore. It's something they have to start taking seriously, and they have to put some money behind it and some effort as well. And I would say that extends to our own organization internally. We've seen this ourselves. You know, we have some very aggressive initiatives, but we've had to slow down and say, where are we with our line of business applications and the state of that data within those systems to ensure that we get the best output possible?
You know, and I think that in even form, obviously, you know, I'm sure companies in their enterprise or organization, you have to start with an assessment to see where they are of their environment, their landscape, of course, you know, before, you know, like a doctor, we have to diagnose where you are now before we can prescribe the solution. So, but with that, after that, you brought up a good point of, you know, where's the advisory and so forth else to that. Do you think that the first practical steps, what do you recommend? Is it more of building a cloud center of excellence for a company, that company should have that to understand how it all applies to the to other business units? Is it, you know, really understanding, of course, of an entire change manager? What do we want to do? What we want to enable AI, whether it's Copilot for different connectors, but where have you worked with, and what do you see that has worked or is a good step for listening in to apply it?
Yeah, we kind of try and go in parallel tracks. So first explaining that whatever the tool of choice is within that environment that they've landed on. You know, for our case, we're a very deep Microsoft partner. So the Copilot is the tool of choice, and that's, we usually deal with other Microsoft partners. So getting an appreciation for what these tools are capable of, what the platform is capable of, giving them an idea of what good prompting looks like, and then also starting to develop some use cases with them. And, you know, use cases are really what should drive any type of initiative. Absolutely. And in fact, a lot of times we say the tools are irrelevant. It's really about defining the problems you're trying to solve for, and then go figure out what the tool set should be. In parallel to that, you know, it's about standing up the governance for those initiatives. We do a data risk review of a company's M365 data state, hoping, hopefully exposing where there might be some risks by turning these tools on. Again, we say that it's not the tool that creates the risk. It's just the tool is exposing the risk that already existed, right? And so that is something we do in parallel with those engagements, giving them some feedback, some gap analysis around what needs to be addressed, what needs to be tightened up. And you had mentioned the center of excellence. You know, that's also something we spend a lot of time helping our customers as well as ourselves create a structure for which you're going to be able to carry this into the future, defining people in the organization that are going to be champions, providing a training platform to be familiar with, what these tools are capable of and how to continue to expand your skills based on your job or role or your function. And then also creating a community within that organization that is going to be responsible and own adoption and culture shift. And we do a number of things ourselves. You know, we do internal user groups where every month we pick a topic. It's very hands-on, it's very interactive, and people get to play with the technology, learn about the newest features and capabilities. But we also spend a lot of time offering up what we consider office hours. So if someone's trying to workshop an idea, they can come to one of the champions on the team and say, I have this thought, I have this concept of a use case, help me work through it. How would I develop it? What tools should I use? What prompts should I use? What are some of the best practices? And that's a journey that doesn't stop, right? So once we disengage with a customer, we really try to encourage them to figure out if there's someone in the organization who can take on that enablement role, similar to what I do for ProArc, and carry that forward.
The key thing is those power users and bringing forward, having those champions and so forth. Of just what we talked about, the excellence. So I don't know if it's for you, and I've seen some of it even with our clients, but how do you keep it to where for the cloud center of excellence, when you're, when you're getting these together, how do you go about to where it's not just another internal committee? How do you keep it where it's really a driver force and adoptions? Because I sometimes the committee or that cloud center is sometimes disconnected and it's not integrated with the other leaders and coming forward. Does that make sense?
Question. Yeah, absolutely. One thing we really want to do is, like, for instance, with the user groups, that is all about the end user. And it's a community that we have established to get people talking to one another about what they've seen and what's been successful or even unsuccessful in some cases, to be able to help one another out. We want to democratize this technology as much as possible. It's also about making sure that there is someone there to answer their questions when it comes to how do I deal with this thing? And being able to go directly to an expert and not necessarily being told, well, here's the training, good luck, use the tools and you'll be measured against how often you're going to be using the tools. It's creating those support structures. In our center of excellence, we have a SharePoint site. We post all of these internal training videos. We post the use cases. We get the business unit heads involved so they know what they're accountable to as far as, the use cases we've developed and what the expectations are as far as using this technology within specific workflows. But overall, it's about trying to create a community of openness and conversation. We have Teams channels where people post things that they've discovered or found. We encourage experimentation and the sharing of success stories as well.
I'm really happy to hear that and really like that, because it really drives through. You're really building a repository, a knowledge base of what works, and really cataloging that. And I think that there is people underestimate, how important, how much that drives that forward. Kind of going through of the industry trends and what seeing with the markets now adopting it effectively for AI and just for, modernizing their cloud environment or just have, and just to keep it on a general term, a digital transformation. you know, what are you seeing, you know, right now in the cloud and AI, you know, adoption market? What are you seeing that is working well? And then what do you see in the next couple of years of, you know, any potential blockers or that people are potentially that might get caught up?
Yeah, I think everybody's at a different point in that journey, depending on the industry. We have some industries or some customers that are, you know, really digging into this and understanding what's possible. They're at that point where they're beginning to consider what agentic workflows look like and putting those into motion. They typically need some assistance, understanding, you know, what that's going to look like, how to measure the outcomes, how to make sure that the inputs aren't being poisoned or tainted, and that we can trust what this, what these tools are doing. I would say, you know, it's still early days. So, you know, it's probably in the low teen or the mid to low teens as far as those organizations that kind of are, get that. What you're also seeing is a lot of organizations are just still in that experimentation phase where they're saying, hey, we have these tools that can help you with end user productivity. Explore and figure out, you know, what you want to accomplish and how it's going to affect you personally in your day to day. And then we have other organizations where we are building them particular agents and or application solutions embedded into such things as their IoT on a in a power plant. You know, being able to tie together systems and being able to use machine learning and AI to do predictive analytics. That's some pretty advanced stuff. That's probably, that's definitely the minority of customers. But there's a few that are out there as well. I would say the challenges right now are that companies are struggling to understand what this is going to look like as it relates to what transformation will do to their business, which processes are going to be affected, which job roles will have to adapt to the technology. So, you know, they're getting the orders from the board of directors or the C-suite. What are we doing around our AI strategy? And yet they haven't really kind of defined, you know, the processes within their business, the various roles, and where those pain points exist. Going back to what I said before, right? We just don't stick AI in our organization for the sake of saying we use AI. We use it because there's certain things we want to get better at. There's inefficiencies that exist that we know that these tools can help us address. And that's kind of more important. And that takes a really honest, you have to take a really honest look at your business to be able to answer those questions. And sometimes that's the part that people don't want to do. They don't want to really do that deep examination of what's working and what's not working today. And how do we take these tools to improve our, you know, improve our business?
No, that's a good point to that, because as you said, it's where is the, what's the end goal? Why not just utilizing it just for the sake of it? Because, you know, you even in a report that they say even, I think it's over 80%, over 90% of just the pilots of AI is not as what, you know, stakeholders really expected or for what businesses expected, especially with the investment. So, you know, with that, is it, do we start, does executives or, and just us as IT leaders, do you start with really looking at, you even have like an architecture record of why we're doing the way it is, the changes to where like of, whether you're building out a brand new greenfield, is it brownfield of this? Is it, does it start, you know, really there of these cases, you know, or is it a little bit more simpler than that? You know, just asking the why or how will this affect? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's definitely comes down to the why, right? Why are we doing this? And a lot of cases, as I stated before, you need to understand what the roles in the organization are and what people do. And for a lot of organizations, they hire someone and they, you know, they're effective. They stay busy. They definitely let you know when they're being overworked, but you're not really sure exactly all of the things they do and what are the things that they struggle with. that you can help them with, and to better define those roles. And then again, that from that will lead to those use cases. You know, as it relates to defining the long-term strategy, you know, if you're building new things today, let's say if you're deciding as a business, we're going to pick up an entirely new business segment. So we're building this from scratch. Those are the places you would absolutely want to bake AI into the cake from the beginning. We're actually in the midst of building up a platform to help our managed customers right now. And, you know, the decision was made, you know, probably this time last year. Anything we develop going forward has to have AI as an element from the get-go. It's not going to be something we develop and then throw AI on top of. It's going to be embedded into any solution we use going forward. And that's what I would suggest to any company that's coming to a new business or a new line of business within their organization. Make sure you're thinking AI first and baking that into the solution from the get-go.
It sounds like it's now, you know, if we're talking of it from Microsoft partner side, it's now adopting a brand new pillar as part of like the cloud adoption framework. Now you have the security, your resilience and all the pieces, but now it seems like how enterprises, how we should think forward is where does the AI play into this role as well? Is that?
And that's a perfect way to state it because, you know, I do strategy sessions with our managed customers. And what we do is we actually rank them against a maturity matrix. For the longest time, it was things like infrastructure and networking and security and process. Within the last 18 months, we decided also to include two different pillars of artificial intelligence or AI and automation. Kind of combine those two together because they're very much related. And data, governance. Two things we weren't tracking maturity on before, but because of where we are with the current state of technology, we decided this is something we also need to be evaluating those customers for and giving them a rating and saying, hey, you need to be thinking a little bit more about how you embed these technologies into your business. But at the same time, what's your maturity as it relates to the governance of your data? Because these two things are tied together.
And I fully agree. It's having those, you know, we have those frameworks, we have those models, you know, you're utilizing now, it seems like, how do you leverage, you know, TOGAF, or if you're looking from an enterprise level, how does this kind of fit into the greater point of the business? You know, and just for yourself, Jim, as of you coming on to this role, when you've taking on more leadership sides, kind of a little bit pivoting to more of just on your thought leadership, you know, what has worked and, you know, for others and for folks that, you know, become an IT director, for folks that are, you know, starting out as a CTO, what has, because you have a lot on your shoulders of initiatives and go forward, what has really worked well for you just over your years when you get into these roles, when you have to think of vendor management, you have to think of how do we address these to, you know, ensure to your, you know, to the executives and so forth, that you're driving forward. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one of the things we have, any good leader needs to be mindful of is listening. You probably don't do nearly enough of that. Even if you think you're listening enough, you probably are. And that will really kind of allow you to understand the things that, where the weaknesses lie, where your strengths are, how to drive initiatives forward. In order to build trust in those folks, when you're telling them, hey, I'm about to take us in a completely different direction. The company that you worked here 5 years ago, some people in our organization have been there over 20 years, is probably going to look very little like it's going to look in the next 5 years. So they want to know and kind of have a vision laid out for them. So it's very important to not just just say, follow me, trust me. It's kind of follow me because this is what we're planning on doing. This is why. Again, why is extremely important. There's a popular speaker out there, Simon Sinek, you know, lead with why, right? And it's true. You need to lead with the why because ultimately if that doesn't make sense, you're going to find that very few people are going to follow whatever initiatives you lay out for that organization or for their business unit or department. And lastly, you got to support them because you can make as many proclamations as you want, but the reality of the situation is some of this stuff is hard. It's not hard from a technical perspective. It's hard from a change perspective. Because you've been doing certain things a certain way for so long, there is a little uncomfortableness in doing it a different way or being told we're now going to change this to do it, you know, in this manner. And some of those things that you prided yourself on being really good at may be de-emphasized, and we want those to be done by AI. And so now what we're asking you to do is maybe some new things that you haven't been doing in the past. So one good example is, you know, maybe you spend a lot of time doing administrative tasks, great value to the organization, but we found that AI can do it cheaper, better, faster, and more accurately. So we want you to be more creative in your role. And maybe we want you to even be responsible for developing agents. So that's a whole new skill set. So you got to make sure people are there. You want to bring them along with you. Invariably, there are going to be folks that decide this is not what they want to do, right? They're going to move on and go to different places. And there's other people who are going to be extremely excited for a new challenge and a new opportunity. And I would say I've been very pleasantly surprised. I'll give you a perfect example. We have I hate to call him an old timer. And if he hears this, he's probably going to call me out on that. A gentleman who's been with our organization for a very long time, started as a network engineer and is still a network engineer, probably about 5 years from retirement. Called me the other day and said, you know what? I was really just ready to coast into retirement, doing the same exact thing I've always done. But I've been listening to you. I've been, you know, doing the things that you've been talking about, and I'm excited for a change. I actually would like to start doing more AI stuff. I want to know how I can do that so I can go out of my career kind of with, you know, something to be proud of and a little bit of a change. And that was very, very enlightening for me.
So this is great. You know, so for you and just through you, was that maybe for yourself, was that recognition of making that impact, that listening well, that you feel like that's really accelerated or really helped you in that, in the leadership side?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that definitely provided some validation that we're on the right track. But again, it's important to listen, right? If he had made that call and I said, I don't have time for you, I would have never heard what the impact of the things that we're doing are. You also have to be willing to take the negative for when you hear something.
Sure.
You have to be able to adapt and say, okay, this is not resonating the way we hope. People are not taking to this the way we thought they were. We have to come at this from a different angle and meet them where they are. And it takes some time to understand that. And you have to be patient. A lot of organizations just want to snap their finger and transform their business overnight. And the reality of it is, you know, I think I just saw a study recently that even across all industries, only about 19% of people use AI every day. It's much higher in the technical fields, but that's pretty low still. So there's still a tremendous amount of growth that potential out there across all industries. And I would say it is across all industries, even down to, you know, trades or manufacturing, you name it. There's ways that this technology will absolutely transform the way we work.
It's very horizontal. It's very agnostic that it's going to, essentially, really, it's already starting, but really seeing the value and revolutionizing, I kind of call it really the true digital transformation out organizations from mom and pop, you know, all the way over to enterprises. So, you know, it brought up a good point because I was seeing at the Super Bowl and so forth, I was seeing the commercials that now you see so much of AI. I've was counting how much of AI is being involved in the commercial that's really driving, you know, the public and just where it's being more commercialized. So do you feel that the potential, what's the word I would say is, of where people are, do you think that people are seeing that it's, the caveat I would say is it the people are seeing that is the technology driving the business, or do you see, are we worrisome of that? We're seeing that more rather than the business driving the technology.
I think some companies, I think some companies are getting it wrong. I think, the perspective I've always taken, whether depending, regardless of the organization I've worked in and the capacity I've worked in, is that, the IT group is there to serve the business. And when it gets twisted around the other way, it never ends well. And so that's why we have to keep coming back to these conversations and reminding organizations that we work with, when we have conversations about this, we don't want to be talking to just the IT director or the CTO or the CIO. If they're the only ones in the room, we're not talking to the right people. AI is a business solution. It's a business conversation. We need stakeholders. We need department heads. We need the other members of the C-suite in the conversation, in the room to talk about this. And invariably, if we're only talking to the tech folks, it's probably not going to be a successful implementation. And we've seen this story before. I can look at other technologies where it crept in the door with the IT group, and they adapted it and loved it and used it. And then we tried to kind of pivot and have the rest of the organization adopt it. But we didn't set the foundation correctly. So they're very resistant. And we kind of go, well, that's your tool set. Can't we just keep doing paper filing and using fax machines? When we know that's, it's obviously not the most efficient way to do work. So
with that, Jim, what would you say, for the future goals, for ProArcs and just for yourself as a thought leader and being the director of it, where would you like to see in the next 6 months or so in the year? Like, where would you like to see that AI, that cloud strategy? What practices would you like to see mature and build off of?
Yeah, when I'm doing webinars, I want to see more hands go up when I ask the question, do you have an AI governance council, right? I want to see more hands go up when I ask the question around, do you have a well-planned, thought-out AI usage policy? I want to see more people responding in the affirmative when the question is asked about how, are you developing use cases and asking them, probing questions about how did you come to those use cases? Are you using a good, solid framework to establish what you're trying to solve for? That, to me, is evidence of being on the right path. It's not necessarily a guaranteed success, right? It still needs a lot of work and a lot of folks pushing from behind, but it at least is an acknowledgement that there's an understanding of what needs to be in place for the potential for success. And then we could take it from there. I think we're just seeing more of that. We've definitely seen an uptick in the engagements we're doing and the willingness of organizations to invest in bringing in experts like ourselves to help them get established. Understanding that you can't expect to just be able to tap someone on the shoulder in your organization and say, you're now the AI expert. Congratulations. Right? We've seen this in IT as well, right? So we've taken the person who used to be the office manager and now they're the network engineer. Can it be done? Sure. Is it the most efficient path to success? No, not at all.
And then I get you kind of answered it like subway, but want to kind of get it to one for listeners that are really, tuning into the episode. If you could really help your clients and so forth, like solve that one major, that AI or that cloud challenge that they're having, what would you think it would be of that? Would it be the education side? Would it be something as, an ops on costs on saving on costs? What do you think it would be?
It's tough to pick one thing, but one area where I love to see much more time spent in the industry is around integration. Right, integration with line of business applications, because I do believe that is really where the real juicy bits lie, the real gold nuggets for an organization. If they can get, for instance, Copilot talking to their HR system and to their, you know, customer relationship management software, their ERP system, you now have the ability to kind of talk across all these platforms and have visibility into all of these things as well, right? There's some real potential there. You know, with the advent of MCP servers, I think this is becoming easier. And hopefully this will be an area where we continue to develop better technologies. When we look at the vendors of these solutions, hopefully they're thinking in that mindset of, hey, we don't necessarily have to build our own AI every single time. Because the fact that there's, you know, there's an agent built into this system and this system and this system, it's kind of drives an organization batty. And then there's always an upcharge or additional fee. What would be nice is to have a server that could speak to all these systems with a common front end that you can ask any question and get the answer you want across all your systems. That, I think, is the real true goal at the end of the day for most organizations. And if we can get there, and I think we will, it's going to take a little time. You know, that's going to just absolutely transform every industry under the sun.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. Like, I'm really excited, but it's just, it's been a whirlwind of how much has been evolved over the past year, 2 years in this regards. You know, now with MCP, right, yeah. You know, with it's and all organizations, everyone's trying to keep up. Like, as you said, there's so many different vendors that are coming out. And so that's the part of you making this as a business owner, entrepreneur, just even a CXO, like an executive, how to manage this, how to figure out what's the best one. How do I do from trade-offs, risks, you know, all of this? It can definitely get overwhelming for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's the other thing we've been working with a lot of customers on too, is visibility. You know, that there's a common refrain that I don't even know what's going on in my environment right now. I know we've sanctioned a couple of tools, but I'm pretty darn sure that there are people using other things. I don't know where my data is going, what's being put into these systems. So we spend a lot of time helping organizations from that perspective as well to make sure that you have visibility into what your users are using, what the risks are of them using these things, and if, you know, you're leaking data that you didn't expect you are, and how to put some controls around that. Not to limit people's ability to explore and experiment, but more importantly, to protect the organization and do this in a more controlled manner.
Yeah, and then you do, because you get into the potential of, if you get too secure down, you have the risk of doing like shadow IT, where people kind of go around all the cases.
Yep.
So that, you know, to your point of that, so, you know, with it all being said, and, you know, so, and this has been a really great conversation, Jim, just thank you for coming on and just having this show. What would you say is, if you had a magic wand with this, as AI has really transformed, let's say in the next even 5 to 10 years, and just so where, what would you like to see it be done, whether it's from a business side or just for your personal, you know, lifestyle, what would you?
I'm a little bit of a home automation nerd. And one of the things that I would love to see from a personal perspective is the combination of robotics and AI. Yeah, the possibility of having something that could walk around my house, understands the space that they're in, and being able to give it tasks to do seems very science fiction to me. Although, you know, the reality of the situation is, you know, we're close. Robotics has come a very long way. AI has come a very long way, and it's just a matter of kind of plopping the brain on top of the body, right? And training it to understand how to move through space. From a business perspective, I would say, going back to what I mentioned earlier, is the promise of being able to integrate all of your systems into a single data warehouse, data lake, where you can ask any link in the organization, regardless of their knowledge. They don't have to rely on experts and interrupting people all day long to get answers to questions. You literally can say, this is your job role. These are the folks who are in your department. We have this vast system that you can go ask questions and various tasks, and you can get any information you're looking for. And that's kind of an amazing thing. We're starting to do some of this. We were trying to find those times where people are being disrupted all the time for asking questions because they're the only ones that hold a certain level of expertise. And we're saying, let's pull that information out of that person and let's put it into an agent so that when these individuals need to ask that person, we can turn them over and say, ask the agent first. The agent doesn't have the answer, then come bother so-and-so to see if there's a, they can answer that question for you. And it's allowed people to be more self-reliant, but it also has sped up process because people aren't waiting for someone to get back to them during a busy day because they don't know the answer to something.
Right. It goes back to, I think that we're utilizing as we kind of move forward of those, those chatbots, really you can kind of call it, where I'm kind of seeing it is that digital avatar of having that, that repository. And so that, again, that helps the individual, the prompter or the user being able to grab that. So again, it helps with saving your time. It helps the other person for the expert saving their time until they get to a certain, level three to, if you want to kind of call it ticketing or anything else, it gets to that point. But yeah. And for that, Jim and so forth, this has been great. If folks wanted to learn more that are listening in, either want to kind of follow, yourself in your journey or wanted to know more about ProArc, with your services, where can they find you?
Yeah, probably the best place to find me and ProArc is on LinkedIn. ProArc has over 200 and almost 208,000 followers on LinkedIn right now. And I am very active. Jim Spignardo, I'm the only Jim Spignardo out there. I post about 3 articles a week. That would be a full-time job. 3 articles a week on topics in AI. I'm actually going to be releasing a free ebook soon on, it's basically called the AI Turning Point, about how companies have to change in order to be able to take advantage of these technologies, and they can't continue to work in the same manners as they did before. But yeah, that's probably the best place to find me and follow me if you'd like. Same with ProArc as well. We're posting, I would say, educational things all the time as it relates to the various technologies we get into. And that space is data, AI, and security. So.
Love it. And then for the folks that are listening in, we'll have all of the, Jim's and so forth else with ProArc's links, so you can be able to follow through, so you can be able to reach out on the website to be able to see, what services they have and how it can be able to be a good fit. So, Jim, thanks for coming in onto the show again. Really like this conversational. It was very educational. Really going, we're kind of seeing into it in our field as the experts of that. For the folks that are listening in, we'll catch you in next time. If you do need any of these services, engineering, Solinox is a Microsoft partner. We provide those engineering resources for you, that strategic guidance as you're looking to adopt AR. How did that get involved? Thanks for everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no-fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solinox.net.